Number one, News Talk Radio.
And it's 1:33 here at KGAB, coming to you live from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Glad to spend some time on this Memorial Day weekend with you. Maybe you're out camping, just cooling out by the tent, roasting some hot dogs, and listening to a little radio. We're glad to have you with us today. If you do want to be on the program, give us a call here at 307-632-6500, or if you're listening to us on the World Wide Web at www.kgab.com, 1-888-503-6500. Well, our next guest is a man by the name of Harold Krent, and I really like the title of this. It's called Pardon Me, Mr. President, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about some of the presidential pardons that have been going on and some of the great historical or well-known pardons by the Office of the Presidency. Mr. Krent, welcome to Across America.
Thank you.
Now, you're a dean and professor at Chicago Kent College of Law, is that correct?
That's correct.
And how long have you been there?
I've been there 17 years.
17 years. Is it getting old yet?
Well, you know, there's always new challenges, not just new students and new enthusiasms, but the economy certainly has taken us for a little bit of a dip. Jobs are changing, and so we have to change with it.
You bet. Well, that's the way, the great American way. You know, it's we've always kind of learned how to change and ride that wave. It was a tumultuous beginning for our country, and I still believe that American spirit still reigns within each and every one of us, if we'll allow it to. So hopefully things will look a little brighter for you in these upcoming months, Mr. Krent. But I really like the title here, Pardon Me, Mr. President. Pardon me, Mr. Krent, but how about telling us about some of these pardons or the history of the pardon of the presidency?
Sure, and we'll take us a date because obviously just a week ago, President Obama did deliver 8 pardons, but it's somewhat in a very different context than has been used, the pardon power has been used by his predecessors. But the pardon power was always viewed as a very important tool of the president. For instance, George Washington, as you mentioned, used the pardon power most notably for the participants in the Whiskey Rebellion. That was one of the first challenges to federal authority. And his idea there was to give an olive branch, to say, okay, there was fighting, there was some deaths, but it's time to, even if you plotted against the country, it's time to heal the wounds and bring you back into society. And he wanted that to be a very public overture. And we've seen the same thing happen after the Civil War with the pardon not only of Jefferson Davis, but also the pardon of this countless secessionists by Lincoln as well as Andrew Johnson. And there, again, the theory was heal the wounds. But the pardon power has fallen somewhat into disuse more recently, and particularly with George W. Bush as well as with President Obama. And they've used it sparingly and not for any public moment, but mainly to restore the civil rights of nonviolent offenders who committed their crimes 20 and 30 years ago. So it's kind of a strange, sporadic use of the pardon power.
Absolutely. And, and like you kind of had alluded to, I think a lot of presidents have gotten away from the original intention of the presidential pardon. You know, basically it was supposed to be a check to where the president was able to correct maybe a judicial error or something of that nature. But since it's not a matter that can be overseen, it's often done for whatever reason the president sees fit. For example, you know, let's say we got a president that is vehemently, religiously anti-capital punishment. Well, instead of abiding by the law of the land, he may give a presidential pardon to someone just because he's totally against anti-capital punishment. Would you agree along some of the lines of that?
Indeed, I think you're right. That was a check on the judiciary. That was a sort of second principal purpose of the pardon power. We've seen that in a couple of contexts. I think Lyndon Johnson used it against some individuals who were convicted of high mandatory minimums, relatively minor offenses. We saw even and Bill Clinton do that in some of relatively minor drug offenses, and he believed that the Congress had simply been too harsh. So that a president can use the pardon power as a check on what he believes to be too harsh punishment meted out by Congress to a particular class of offenders. We haven't seen that with George Bush. We haven't seen that with President Obama, which again, is interesting. Of course, on the other hand, the pardon power can be used for rewarding friends, as we saw in the last days of the Clinton White House when he pardoned the financier Mark Rich as well as his half-brother and other acquaintances as well. So it's a great tool that can be used to correct injustice, but also to be friendly to supporters of the administration.
So would you say it's pretty difficult, if not impossible, to stop a presidential pardon or commutation for a criminal that maybe was tried correctly?
In my view, it should be impossible. The only way in which there's a check on the presidential pardon power, again, in my view, and I think that's been borne by some court decisions, is through the impeachment. If individuals believe that the president is using the pardon power in an unconstitutional way, for instance, to reward those of a certain religion or a certain race, then that might be grounds for impeachment. But other than that, the power is sacrosanct, that no one is to touch or second-guess presidential decision to grant or to withhold a pardon.
We're talking with Dean and Professor of Chicago Kent College of Law, Harold J. Krent, and we're talking about presidential pardons for those of you that are just joining us here on Across America here on KGAB. So with that said, Harold, what do you think the political and maybe media fallout of a president commuting the deaths of all federal prisoners on death row? Is that a possibility, or is there something constitutionally that would prohibit him from that?
I don't think there would be anything constitutional at all. In fact, I think it's within the president's constitutional rights. The political fallout is something else again. Now, certain governors have done that. Right? We've had governors who have refused to allow any individuals to be put to death within their own states. For instance, George Ryan in Illinois comes to mind, and I believe there's some others as well. Certainly we've never seen a president do that, and there are fewer instances of the federal death penalty as opposed to those on the state levels. But that would be constitutional, but nonetheless, there certainly would be political fallout, and so that's a step that I doubt most presidents would want to take.
Well, and we know that one of the last federal prisoners executed, of course, was the infamous Timothy McVeigh. He was not pardoned. In fact, there was three prisoners were executed during the Bush administration, and however, there was none for the 40 previous years. So does it look like it may be executions are maybe going to come back without having that presidential pardon step in the way? And for our listeners, matter of fact, let's go to this break, and I got some questions for you here. We are talking with our guest today. He is the dean and professor at Chicago Kent College of Law, Harold J. Krent. And when we come back, we'll come back with your questions and phone calls if you would like to talk more about these presidential pardons that come from the President of the United States. We'll be back right after this. On a Sunday afternoon. And it's 1:46 here in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Welcome back to Across America with Gary Freeman and our special guest, Dean and Professor, Chicago Kent College of Law, Harold J. Krent. Welcome back to Across America, sir.
Thank you.
You know, I have a question for you. As far as the pardon process, are there people constantly putting things on the president's desk for these pardons, or what's kind of the process of how he gets a pardon, he looks at it, makes an evaluation, or does some aide come up and say, hey, here's a hot one, you need to go ahead and sign off on this?
The process itself is not dictated in the Constitution, so this is a process that has evolved over time. There is an Office of the Pardon Attorney in the Department of Justice, and the office receives requests for clemency, pardons, and commutations of sentences, reviews them, contacts U.S. attorneys, prosecutors who are involved in the prosecutions themselves, and then will make a judgment and a recommendation to the president. There's a huge backlog. Currently, estimates are there are 4,000 or 5,000 requests that have not been responded to. So obviously, our president, as well as predecessors, have had a hard time sifting through these requests and trying to make a judgment as to which to grant and which to deny.
So with that process being what it may, do the ones, I mean, and this seems like an obvious statement or question that we're making here, but I'm just trying to get another grab on this. Basically, so the ones that go to the front of the line, if you will, those are the ones that maybe are going to die, say, 2 weeks from now, and the guys that aren't going to die for maybe 2 years from now, they could put on the back burner and hope that the next president will pardon them?
That can happen. Again, there's so few federal prisoners who've been sentenced to death that this hasn't been a burning issue at the federal level the way it has been in some states. But that would be the case, and that would be up to the Office of the Pardon Attorney to prioritize analysis and investigations to present those that he or she determines to be worthy to the president. Now, there have been presidents who've gone outside the pardon attorney, and for instance, President Clinton at the end decided to issue pardons not through the office of the Justice Department, but based on his own understanding of who wanted to be, who needed to be shown clemency. And the same was true under President Nixon. But there is that process for that has been followed by most presidents, at least recently. And you are right that it would be up to the Office of the Pardon Attorney to prioritize which ones the president should act upon first.
Well, and I think Bill Clinton kind of had an obligation to James McDougal in that crowd, didn't he?
Well,
he felt like he did, that whole Rose Law Office stuff that was going on that Hillary Clinton was famous for saying, I don't know, I don't remember, I can't recall. Wasn't James McDougal one of the ones that were in partnership with that operation, and was he not one that President Bill Clinton had pardoned?
I believe he was one, and yet then his wife, who was, again, also involved in it, did not receive a pardon, I believe, at the end. So he split that determination, that family, in terms of how he reacted. And, of course, there were many others involved in campaign fundraising, for instance, whom he pardoned as well.
Now, let's go take a trip back, if you're able. I'm kind of interested in what some of the more historically famous pardons were. Were there any in the 1800s that maybe we should be aware of, or did most of the historically popular pardons take place in the early 1900s?
Well, in the Jefferson Davis pardon, of course, was the most controversial of the 19th century.
Tell us about it.
Well, Jefferson Davis was president of the Confederacy, and to many people, he represented somebody who was disloyal to his country. Mm-hmm. And because of what he did or the movement he led, and resulted in great carnage and loss of hundreds of thousands of lives. And so when the olive branch was given back to Jefferson Davis, though he had fled to England, I think that the symbolism was very important. Symbolism was we have to heal the wounds and reunify the country. And that was followed up by a massive grant of pardons to those who took place in the rebellion, but under certain conditions that were imposed by Lincoln and Andrew Johnson. Sort of an interesting side note at the time, Lincoln was charged with favoritism for disproportionately giving pardons to those who lived in Kentucky, his home state, as opposed to from other states. So even he was accused of a kind of a discrimination at that time. One of the other sets of interesting pardons were those people who had been accused of polygamy in trying to populate Utah. And the theory there, again, I think was similar to other instances we've discussed, is that by pardoning those who had been charged with polygamy, it was a way to recognize the compromise that went into Utah statehood and to ensure a more vibrant relationship between Utah and the United States in the future. So that, of course, was quite controversial as well.
Now, evidently, Jimmy Carter was known for pardoning many of the Vietnam draft dodgers during his presidency. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
That was controversial, and of course, some people disagreed vociferously by suggesting that if you're a draft dodger, if you fled to Canada, that's your choice. You'd have to stay in Canada or Russia, wherever else draft dodgers ended up. And Carter was convinced that the way to put some of the fissures that were created because of the disagreements over the Vietnam War, the way to put that behind us was to extend an amnesty to the draft dodgers at that time. I mean, we've had lots of instances of pardons in lesser known cases, less politically salient cases, in terms of people running distilleries at home, in terms of people not paying transfer taxes on real estate, and so forth. But certainly about the biggest pardon of the 20th century was that from Gerald Ford to Richard Nixon. There was litigation over that, which eventually was resolved in the favor of not second-guessing the pardon of Richard Nixon. And, you know, interestingly enough, some people thought that Nixon would even pardon himself before he left office. But, of course, he didn't do that, and he left it for Gerald Ford to do. But that was very politically controversial, and some people thought it played a role in his defeat in the next presidential election.
Well, speaking of Richard Nixon, he also pardoned a pretty well-known head throughout history, a man by the name of Jimmy Hoffa, who was serving a 15-prison sentence for jury tampering and fraud. President Nixon, I believe it was in 1971, had pardoned him under the condition that he would not engage in direct or indirect management of any labor organization. Did he get a lot of heat for that?
Indeed, that particular pardon was interesting because it did not follow the procedures that the rest of the pardons did. He did that for some political sort of deal outside of the regular pardon process. It did get some heat, but of course it was defeated relatively soon after when Hoffa disappeared. But in that guise as well, I think the effort was that, you know, Nixon maybe wanted to show some loyalty to the Teamsters, but also wanted to try to ensure some kind of labor peace.
And George Steinbrenner, who I believe just passed away not too long ago, he was the owner of the New York Yankees, as some of you may remember. He actually was indicted on 14 criminal counts. And if I'm not mistaken, of course, we know that he was a major Republican donor. President Ronald Reagan was going to pardon Steinbrenner if the Yankees owner admitted to the crime. How did that all fall down?
Well, my memory here is a little shaky as well, is I believe he was given a commutation for one conviction and then maybe pardoned on another, but I'd have to go back and check the records. Certainly, the specter of presidents pardoning those who contribute to their campaigns is not limited to Republicans or to Democrats, because it's happened on both sides of the aisle. And Steinbrenner is a good example for Republicans, as Mark Rich was more recently for the Democrats.
If you're just joining us, we are talking to Dean and Professor of Chicago Kent College of Law, Harold J. Krent. We're talking about, pardon me, Mr. President, about presidential pardons. Harold, just for the record, in case there are some listeners that may not know the difference, you and I have both made reference to pardons and commutations. Can you give us a little breakdown of the difference between the two?
Sure. There is only one pardon power in the Constitution, but it really covers three or four different presidential actions as well. The first is simply to take someone and say, you're outside of the criminal process. Even though you've been charged with a crime or you're suspected of a crime, you are receiving a presidential pardon, which absolves